According to various sources, the vote in the House, a closed-door meeting with representatives in the Republican caucus, 113 to 99, Scalise getting more votes than Jordan. So if they take that to the floor, though, I'm trying to figure out how that happens. The idea is that they would select a person and then bring it to the full Congress, right? But 113 votes doesn't get you the speakership. So I'm kind of curious how determinative 113 to 99 is. That's very split, isn't it? So we'll keep you posted on that, but that's the latest reporting on that. It's 12:13. There's Terry Savage, the syndicated financial columnist. Hi, Terry.
Indeed. Watching the markets, watching inflation, watching even that political news. You're right. It would either take all of the Republicans.
Right. Minus four.
I mean, most minus one of the holdouts,
yeah.
Right, to elect Scalise, or it would take Democrats crossing the aisle and saying we can work with Scalise. And, you know, I think you have in front of you the example of Israel, which was conflicted in all kinds of political ways, and that opened opportunities for other bad things to happen. So there might be a new approach to how they deal with this political impasse on the Republican side. Interesting to see.
News Nation reporter who was on with us earlier today said that Kevin McCarthy has been coy about his possibility of re-entering the race. That was Mike Vicara, the bureau chief in Washington, D.C. for News Nation. And he is not, even though he has at first said, I don't want the job anymore, is not beyond being ushered back in, which would be bizarre, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, I'm not a political watcher, but it strikes me as that a lot of water's over that dam, and that's probably
not
that ship
happen.
Has sailed or whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
You know what I mean?
Pick your saying.
And Scalise, you know, has had a leadership role. So the idea of the whip is supposed to whip all the votes into shape, which was, I think, Scalise. So I don't know how he can get his own votes whipped up. But
boy, look how close that is, Terry. 113.99. I mean, what's that? 14 by my math. So that's a pretty split Republican Party. Surprise on which of those two guys they want to lead them.
Exactly. Well, and we will let them make that decision while we sit here and look at a market that started out higher and is now edging lower, at interest rates that are doing something interesting. Long-term rates have dropped, actually. The 10-year, the one on which mortgages are based, was as high as 4.8% a couple of days ago. It's now just under 4.6%. That's a pretty significant move, even while our short-term rates, T-bills still at 5.5%, the two-year edging up as well. So what we're seeing is a little bit of a change in the yield curve. The two-year Treasury is now yielding 5%. So, and the market is holding its breath for two things, as you correctly pointed out. Today we had producer prices
right
up sharply, more than expected. But more importantly, tomorrow we'll have the Consumer Price Index. That's expected to show, to come in at 3.6%. We'll get that at 7:30 in the morning, our time.
Okay.
So if it's more than 3.6%, you'll know, oops, too much inflation. That would be a slight decline after 2 months of increases. And even as we speak, we're waiting for the Fed to release the minutes of its most recent meeting, because what's going on in the markets is this mental jockeying about, will the Fed say, yeah, we don't have to raise in November, we'll still watch inflation, we're data dependent, but maybe we'll skip in November, skip another increase, or that's coming up in a few weeks, or will they raise rates again in November? And they're hoping to get hints. And every time a Fed governor goes out and speaks and uses a new word or something like that, there's all kinds of attention paid. So that's what the markets are revolving around today.
By the way, Terry, if the producer price index goes up a lot, then doesn't that mean they're going to pass it along to consumers and the CPI would go up?
You would think so, and it will go up. The CPI will show an increase, but the question is how big an increase, and what gets translated and how quickly to consumer prices is part of the mystery of the economy. So, yeah, that's why we'll be looking for that number first thing tomorrow morning, and it'll set the tone for the day.
I got questions from listeners. Anything else you want to press?
Yeah, let me say one thing. Medicare open enrollment is around the corner. Starts on the 15th, so 4 days. Could I just do a quick little riff on this?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I know we have a lot of seniors, and you're already enrolled in Medicare. There's not much new about basic Medicare itself. You know that you probably enrolled, even if you were still working, in Part A. It's free, and it covers hospital care, surgery, and lab tests. But Part B is your enrollment in all the other things, and you have some choices to make. So if you're in traditional Medicare, you have Part B and a supplement. And about now, you're going to start hearing commercials all over the place, television and radio, touting Medicare Advantage programs. They sometimes call it Part C. They tell you it will be less expensive, and it will. And they tell you you might even get more in your Social Security check because the charge for this plan is less than what's been your deduction for Medicare Part B. However, and you can switch during open enrollment. So if you have been tired of watching your Part B premiums go up, and they do every year, and your Medicare supplement, which you want to sign up for the very best one in the days up until 2020, the best program was Plan F as in first, but now it is Plan G as in great. And when you first sign up, within 6 months, you cannot be turned down for this great plan, Plan G, which is the most comprehensive supplement there is. Now, having said that, why would you ever want to switch? Well, as I said, you might be upset because your Medicare Part B taken out of your Social Security check goes up, and because your supplement might go up a bit. So they're trying to get you into Medicare Advantage, and it's just a short term for managed care. They get reimbursed by the government. And if they can curtail the services and make a profit, that's what pays for those commercials.
Yep.
So while you're healthy, Medicare Advantage is inexpensive. It is less expensive than your Medicare Part B and your supplement. But once you become sick, you become aware of the limitations, the ability to go out of the network to get surgical consultations, to get surgery elsewhere. So Advantage is fine as long as you're healthy. And one more thing, Advantage includes Part D, which is the drug plan. In open enrollment, everyone, even if you're sticking with your traditional Medicare and your supplement, you should go back and review your Part D prescription drug coverage because that changes every year. Go on Medicare.gov, sit down with all the bottles that you have, line them up, the drugs, the dosage, and everything, and then click. You may be able to save $15, $20, $30 a month by switching your Part D drug plan. That is something you should do. Think twice about switching into Advantage, because one last word on that, although they tell you can always go back to traditional Medicare, you may not be accepted back into that wonderful supplement that covers just about everything, currently supplement G. If you're already ill, you're not getting back into that supplement, and so you'll still have expenses to bear.
Into the supplement, but what about the main part?
You can get back in the main part, but there's a lot that Medicare Part B doesn't cover, deductibles and co-payments and all kinds of things that your supplement does. When you sign up the first time for Medicare, you sign up for the best supplement, currently G, great.
Yep.
But if you were in G and then you switch to Advantage for a year or two or three and think, I'm saving so much money, and then you have a heart attack or a stroke or cancer or whatever, and you go, wait, I can't see that doctor, I can't see that, I'm going back to old Medicare. Yes, it will cover what it covers for any physician that accepts Medicare. You're not limited, but you need to pick a supplement then, and once you've got medical conditions, you cannot go back to Plan G, the great plan.
One last question about that. It seems like in the past you've counseled us that some of these decisions you make about which you sign up for can be critical and lasting. If you don't want to make a mistake, pay attention to this. That's not true for Part A, though, right? When you hit...
No, Part A is Part A. You sign up when you're 65. It's free. But that's probably, I hope, the least of your costs.
Okay.
There's a column up. Terry Savage just posted it. And I made a slip of the tongue when I first published this, so I want you to know that the best plan is Plan G for great. That's how I'll remind myself. Plan F was the first one, no longer available since 2020, but people may have Plan F. You definitely don't want to give that up if you have it.
All right.
Read it at terrysavage.com.
Well, we have a lot of 65-year-olds listening who are all asking essentially the same question. Let me just read a couple of them. You can respond en masse. I'm turning 65 in November. I'm currently on my wife's insurance policy from her employer. What do I need to do regarding Medicare? Hey, John, for Medicare, if you're still working at age 65, we should still sign up for Part A because it's free, right? Does this then serve as a supplement to your employer's health coverage? Terry, you want to dive in on that?
Yeah, yes, you should sign up, even if you're still working, for Part A. It is free. And I'm not all on short employer's insurance plans, but check with your plan. We'll use that as, in a way, may use that as a supplement to their own coverage. And some may require you to sign up for Part A when you're 65. So it doesn't cost you anything. You might as well go ahead, even if you're not retiring, even if you're not, has nothing to do with Social Security, you're not taking that till you're 70, and you're not going to take Part B and a supplement or Advantage.
Just A. And how far in advance of your birthday do you sign up for that, or do you wait until you're 65?
You sign up shortly, a month before, and it goes into effect the month after you sign up. So you want to sign up, it will go into effect the month after your birth
month. Well, then who pays your medical bill? Like, you get a bill, and my insurance company pays, but now if I've signed up for this Part A, will the government pay, or was the insurance company pay?
Well, no. Once you're officially signed up for Medicare Part A, it will cover, that just covers hospital expenses primarily.
Okay, there you are.
Okay, so you definitely want to sign up. You want to get it started in the month in which you turn 65.
But my question is then, say
you
the hospital expense, would the insurance company pay those bills then, or would Medicare pay those bills? See what I'm saying? If I've signed up for Medicare Part A, but I'm still working, or my spouse isn't, has insurance, these people are wondering who pays the bill then. Maybe they don't care, but...
It depends if it's gone through. Actually, you should probably start your sign-up for Part A 3 months before you turn 65 to get them, to get it effective in the month you turn 65.
All right, we're okay? October, so if your birthday is
January. So you have an open kind of an enrollment period that starts 3 months before you turn 65, and it ends 3 months after you turn 65. If you don't sign up for Part A when you're first eligible, you have to wait to sign up, and you have to sign up for Medicare in open enrollment, or when you lose your other coverage.
How much more is Part G, the great one, Terry?
It depends on where you are, and it depends. It depends on your Medicare Part B is adjusted based on your income. So there's something called IRMA, I-R-M-A-A, which I can never remember what it is. But it says basically, if you're still working, this is Part B now. Depending on your income, you will be charged more. It could be a lot more for your monthly Medicare Part B deduction, which is taken out of your Social Security check. That's the way it happens for most people. And so your supplement changes based on the state you're in and the policy you enroll in, and your Part G, you'll have to go on to the other place to go find that. There's two ways to do that. You can do that at Medicare.gov. It's very easy. You can actually sign up and enroll and compare the supplements. Now, all the G supplements offer the exact same coverage. So what's the difference? You'll get ratings based on their service, based on their billing and so forth. It basically shouldn't matter. But they all must offer the exact same coverage. The pricing may be a little bit different too. So go to Medicare.gov and sign up for both your supplement when you first apply.
Right.
And you're going to keep that forever because you want to get the best supplement. Yes, it's the most expensive of all of them. But if you ever get sick, you'll be glad you have it. And then you want to sign up for Part D, the drug, and that you're going to go back every single year.
Terry, I'm 65 this past March. I still work full-time and have great health, dental, eye prescription insurance. Do I sign up for Medicare?
Yeah, and some employers' coverage requires that you sign up for Part A at 65. So ask your employer.
But I don't want to lose that good coverage I'm getting.
No.
Says this person.
No, you won't lose your good coverage. You're entitled to it as an employee. But they may require Part A once you're 65. So ask the HR department.
Here's another question for Terry Savage, 312-981-7200. This one says, John. Oh, I'll handle this one, Terry. I have $13,000 in cash. Should I put it in an ultra-short bond fund or in treasury bills? Well, I don't know what an ultra-short bond fund is. Let's go to Terry Savage.
Well, it depends on which ultra-short bond fund you're talking about. Look, I like to keep it simple. I don't remember exactly because I have treasury bills that are staggered maturities. And yesterday I got a message in my email said, check your inbox at Treasury Direct. And I went, really? Did I get a rollover yet? Oh, sure enough. And it told me that it rolled over and what the price that they were taking out. So the net difference is
right,
the interest.
Right.
And I haven't gotten onto my bank account today, but that money dropped into my bank account. That money drops in ahead of the next 6 months. You get it up front, number one. Number two, so it can earn in my money market fund, whatever that's earning, not very much, but it's earning a little interest, or I could spend it. And number two, I don't pay state income taxes on it. To me, I'm just in love with T-bills. I think it's the ultimate in chicken money. So play your games if you want. Hunt around for higher CD rates. Take the time out of your earning interest period to move them from bank to bank. You lose a week's interest.
Here's your next question. Ready?
Okay.
I have $300,000 to invest.
You really, John? Let's go to dinner.
This is from 773.
Okay.
I'm 708. 773 says, I have $300,000 to invest. Is there a program of some sort that would produce a monthly income with that money?
Well, there are all kinds of ways you could generate a monthly income, but the question is, are you willing to dig into your principal in order to generate that income?
No.
That's the first thing. Okay. So I would take $300,000 and divide it in 12 or 10 parts anyway, and buy 6 month T-bills, automatically roll them over, and stagger your purchases by the month. And then as they automatically renew every 6 months after that, the interest rate, whatever it is that's set at the auction, will drop back into your checking or money market account. I mean, that's the easiest way to do it. Now, you're spending the interest, you're getting the rate that is determined by the inflation outlook at every 6 month auction, which happens every Monday. So you'll still have your $300,000. It may be diminished by inflation over the years.
Yep.
But if you're older and you just want income and safety, that'd be the way to do it. Just stagger your purchases so that as they renew automatically and you keep updating the amounts, the renewal decision, the money will come right into your account.
So without touching the principal, 5% of $300,000 is $15,000 you would make in a year. That
right.
would be
and
one way to supplement
so
your income.
So you'd get about $1,000, a little over $1,000 a month at current rates.
312-981-7200. We'll take more of your questions for Terry Savage after we check some business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Deerfield-based Walgreens has named veteran healthcare executive Tim Wentworth as its new CEO. Wentworth is coming out of retirement to lead Walgreens as it transitions from healthcare retailer to health services provider. Wentworth was the CEO of Express Scripts, the nation's biggest pharmacy benefits company, before he retired in 2021. He'll take over as Walgreens CEO on October 23rd. Speaking of Walgreens, the company is about to launch an on-demand virtual healthcare service. It'll offer dermatology, primary care, and urgent care starting later this month. Patients can set up video visits with providers, have virtual consultations with a doctor or nurse, and get prescriptions shipped to their homes. When it launches, the service will be available in 9 states, including Illinois. Patients will have to pay out of pocket initially. The cost of visits will range from $33 to $75. Insurance will eventually be accepted. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And now the business of food and Steve Alexander.
Why did the combine block the road? It is not a speed joke, and I'll tell you more after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us. It's truck season. Put a Silverado in your toolbox. It's also harvest season, and if you're on a two-lane country highway, you may find yourself stuck in a line of vehicles behind a great big combine that's taking up about two-thirds of the highway. It's happening a lot around the Midwest right now, and that led to a Facebook post by Deanne Frieders, who farms with her husband and in-laws near Waterman, which is south of DeKalb. She included a photo taken from behind a road-hogging combine, and she wrote,
"See that slow-moving combine? We don't like driving it on the road any more than you like following it. But it's necessary. The land we farm is not one giant piece. Instead, it's like a quilt. There are squares and rectangles in different locations that make up our livelihood."
And much to Deanne's surprise, it touched off a bit of a firestorm.
Yeah, I thought this was an innocuous post that was just like, hey, like, I realize you're out there.
In less than a week,
it has had 79,000 reactions, just under 5,000 comments, and 23,000 shares.
And no surprise, it's social media. The comments are not all positive.
You know, they're like, they have a job to do too, and we're not any more important than they are. And, well, why can't you drive them in the ditch? And I'm trying to help them understand that these pieces of equipment can tip. We can't drive them in ditches.
But those are outnumbered by the supportive comments.
A lot of people saying, thank you, farmers. And I don't even think farmers are so much looking for the thank you. It's just mutual respect and understanding. Like, this is just a couple months out of the year that we need the roads. It's not like we're out joyriding around.
You can read the rest of her essay and the 5,000 comments on Facebook. She does a lot of posting about farming and food.
I'm on Instagram and on Facebook at This Farm Girl Cooks. And then my recipes are on my website at thisfarmgirlcooks.com.
From the farm to your belly, as we continue to celebrate National Pizza Month, today is National Sausage Pizza Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Here's Terry Savage on the Wintrust Business Lunch from terrysavage.com. Lots
quick mention,
of questions,
Sean.
Go ahead.
Quick mention.
Yep.
I should have said this.
Yep.
I thought about it. When you're 60, once you sign up for Medicare Part A, you can no longer contribute to a health savings account. And because your Part A coverage could start up to 6 months back from the date you sign up for Medicare, that's it, they may backdate it, you will be penalized if you've contributed to a health savings account. So they're a great thing. They'll even help you later on pay your Medicare premiums, but you may not contribute once you're on Part A. So if you're applying for Part A, stop contributing to your health savings account.
Well, those HSAs you normally sign up for in the beginning of the year, now we're towards the end of the year.
Exactly. But no later than the minute you sign up for Medicare Part A,
yeah,
do not make any more contributions to your health
savings account. What about your spouse? What if that person is...
That's individual coverage. The spouse can have it. Those are individual accounts.
1252. Terry, is there a penalty for withdrawing money early from the six-month T-bill?
You can't. That's the thing. If you're going to need it sooner, sign up for a three-month T-bill. The rate's a little lower. You're in there for 6 months. So leave it in a money market fund if you think you need... And everybody should have some in a money market fund because I can pay cash for the car repair and get a discount as opposed to putting it on my card or whatever might happen. I have to bail my nephew out of jail. You always need some liquidity. But for T-bills, there's no early out.
Okay. And by the way, what did your nephew do? All right, here's Pam.
I don't have one, so it was easy.
Pam, you're on WGN. What can we do for you, Pam?
Oh, I didn't realize it was me. I had signed up originally for Medicare, and I had a supplement for about like 4 years. And then there was a big promotion here in town, and they said, well, you have to go to the Advantage. You have all these others. I'm perfectly healthy. I do not take any prescription drugs or anything. I wanted to know, can I go back and give up the Advantage? I'm finding out the Advantage isn't quite that what it was cracked up to be.
Yeah, you can go back, and but what you'd really like to do, and I'm not quite sure how you do it, so it's a good question, I'll look into it, is you can go back right now during open enrollment. But what you need to do is make sure you'll be accepted into the best supplement program, which is now G. So I am not sure if you're not already on Medicare, whether you can be accepted into a supplement. And that's a really great question. So if you'll go to terrysavage.com, post it, I'll contact Medicare and find out.
Good question. Thank you for the answer. Do you need additional cancer insurance with Medicare G?
You know, those are the kind of insurance policies that make insurers rich and let you sleep. So the question is the price of peace of mind. Most of those cancer insurance policies are indemnity policies, or they're the policies that if you get cancer and if they can't track it back to that time you had a basal cell removed on your arm 12 years ago, because they're going to be very tough about paying out. It's extra money to live on, to pay for, to drive to doctor's appointments or to get a driver to take you to your treatments and so forth. It's never been a good bet. But I'll tell you the savage truth. I wrote an article about it, years ago. And for many years, I paid that premium every year. And then I said, this is ridiculous. I have enough other insurance. But I was scared to give it up because I'm so superstitious that the minute I gave it up.
Yeah, right.
You know, so I have mixed feelings about those policies.
Dave has a question for Terry.
You don't need it. Okay.
Well, there's the shortest answer. Terry, Dave, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi, Terry. Thanks for taking my call. My wife's turning 62 next July. She wants to take Social Security under her own earnings and possibly switch to mine when she hits 67, and I'm at full retirement age. Can she do that?
She can do that, but I'm not sure how that's going to work out for you. And I stopped mentally trying to calculate those quick questions on the air, and I will send you to spend $39 at MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com. Okay? Spousal benefits are reduced if they're claimed early. At full retirement age, a spouse, it depends on what her benefit would be on her account. And it also, there's some little tricks. When Social Security signs you up early, they may sign you up for all benefits. This new book coming out deals with this. It's kind of a trick of Social Security's that precludes her from then switching to her own benefit later, or your benefit later.
Your benefit later, yeah.
So I want you to just, and I'm telling you this is so complex, my brain always freezes when I'm asked a specific question. Just go to MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com and figure out what works in your circumstances.
And that's all the time we have.
Whoops. Okay. Whoops. That was fast.
It always goes fast, and I think it went well today. If you missed some of this and want to hear a lot of that discussion about Medicare, it will be posted as a podcast at WGNradio.com on the John Williams page after the show. Okay, Terry, let's talk next Wednesday.
Thanks. Looking forward.
Yeah, thank you.